Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And ain't it good to be back home again?
Okay, that's the end of singing for tonight. You can come out from under the table. That wasn't going to last long anyway. Oh, my God, it's good to be back in the home studio. I certainly did enjoy being in Washington, D.C. I always do. I love getting out and sort of pushing the limits of work. And that we did, Rick Smith and Jake and I. And bless his heart, you know what? The Legion of Valor medal certainly goes to Rick Smith for his efforts in D.C. He wasn't kidding, nor was I. That was one sick puppy. Burning up with fever, guts were a wreck. But you know what? He climbed in behind the microphone like a trooper and didn't let... He's a rock! I mean, he... Gee whiz! I mean, he's like Aeneas carrying his wizened old daddy out of the flaming ruins of Troy to go found Rome on the Seven Hills or some such, whatever it was that Virgil said. And I don't mean Virgil down to the gas station. I mean Virgil who wrote the Aeneid. He did amazing work. And like I said, it's always good and enjoyable to go to those events, and you meet a lot of wonderful people. And there's a lot of great conversations that go on behind the scenes, and then there's great conversations that go on behind the microphones. But it's good to get home. It is good to get home. And first and foremostly, let me extend my my sincere and enduring thanks to John Fox for stepping up and taking one for the team and doing 3 hours a night for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. To keep the regular schedule of the Horn cooking along, he did amazing work in his own right, and I am very much grateful for it. But something happens whenever I'm gone because to tell you the truth, if there was any knock on the otherwise beautiful old Omnishorum Hotel in Washington, D.C., which is truly a grand dame hotel of the area. It doesn't look like much from the outside. It's kind of yellow brick and old. But, man, you get inside, the entire staff is pure professional. It's a union shop, by the way. That's what makes them so good. They're exquisite and purely professional in all that they do everything in their power to help you. But no matter how hard they try, sometimes things do go sideways. And if you've emailed me in the last 2 or 3 days and I didn't respond, it has everything in the world to do with the fact that my connectivity in my room there was for diddly. It was not at all a good connection. So my apologies for being... less than my usual responsive self on email, but it just wasn't possible. And it really, you know, you can respond with your cell phone, but it's not much good. It's not much good until, you know, for extended talky-talky kind of thing. No, not much good at all. So my apologies, but I'm home and I'm back where I'm supposed to be, and happy about it. Great conversations while we were there. I was thrilled to death to meet a new ally in the fight against mountaintop removal in the form, in the person of the brilliant, John Gensler, working with, OperationFree.net. OperationFree.net, the veterans organization that is working to get America to realize that a clean energy future, a green energy future, is not only something smart, it is also something that is absolutely vital to our national security interests, which, you know, this is sort of brought to mind by the latest round of saber-rattling with Iran. Oh, Bob, please don't start the program with Iran. Please don't start the program with Iran. I'm not going to start the program with Iran. I'm not going to start the program with Israel either, but it may be hard not to get into it somewhere later in the program. Because they kind of got busted, Israel. Yeah. Stop, Bob. You said you weren't going to start, and I'm not. No. Let's be shallow and simple and fluff. Let's do some fluff. You okay with some fluff? Yeah. What do I mean by fluff? I mean this. You know that Carly Fiorina. What? Carly from Purina? No. Carly Fiorina, the woman who nearly destroyed Hewlett-Packard, who proudly announced, by the way, that if she had it all to do over again, the question was put to Carly Fiorina. Well, let me ask you this. If you were still the CEO at Hewlett-Packard and the figures said you had to cut 10,000 jobs today, would you do it as a responsible CEO? Her answer, of course. By the way, having managed HP through the worst technology recession in 25 years, didn't she get fired? Didn't she get fired as CEO because of the terrible job she did? But no, she managed it. Yeah, she managed HP through one of the worst technology recessions in 25 years and doubled the size of the company to... What? I think Carly Fiorina's making stuff up. But anyway... That's not where we go. No. We go to this. You know, of course, already that she was caught on an open mic. At least she didn't have a mouth full of cornbread mumbling obscenities into a microphone like George Bush did a few years ago. No, she was caught on the mic criticizing Meg Whitman, who is running for governor of California, for going on Sean Hannity's program right after winning the primary. A little bit of a difference. But she said more. Beyond that, she was also live on camera. Or not live, but, well, the mic was open, the mic was hot, and the camera was running. When she decided to talk about her opponent in November, Democratic incumbent Senator Barbara Boxer, who gets a lot of stuff right. You know, none of them get everything right, but some of them get a lot of stuff right, and Barbara Boxer's one of them. And Carly Fiorina said this.
Sacramento. Yeah. Yes. Lauda saw Barbara Boxer briefly on television this morning and said what everyone says. God, what is that hair?
This from a woman who looks like the high school football team has just stuck her head in the toilet and given her a swirly.
What is with that hair? And then she takes her and she puts her hand up next to her little do. What is with her hair?
And you know what? In that moment, honest to Pete, in that moment is everything you ever wanted to know about Carly Fiorina. She is all form, no substance. She is the Gertrude Stein-esque equivalent of Oakland, California. There's no there.
What is with that hair? Oh, my God.
You know, it's another one of those Warner Brothers moments, isn't it? It really is. I'm beginning to think that maybe the theory that was posited in Who Framed Roger Rabbit was actually real. There really is a Toontown. And every now and then, they escape. And they get loose. Because okay, let's go back for just a minute. Let's go back. Yeah, here we go.
I sort of stuck it over there, but if we could make it a little shorter, maybe. Sacramento. Yes. Laura saw...
What is she, pining for Sacramento? I mean, like, Sandra calls in from Sacramento. What is it that has Carly Fiorina all worked up about Sacramento? Did you hear the sigh? Sacramento. When the swallows return to Sacramento. No, no. Oh, damn, I sung again! Sang!
Like, I sort of stuck it over there, but if we could make it a little shorter, maybe.
Yeah, stick it somewhere else.
Sacramento. Yes. Laura saw Barbara Boxer briefly on television this morning and said what everyone says. God, what is that hair? So yesterday, you didn't...
What is with that hair? It's so yesterday. Yeah, because her swirly-do is so 21st century. I mean, really, it's Jane Jetson. Wouldn't you agree? But no. Do you hear the caddy in that? Oh, this is going to be fun going all the way to November. She is an escaped Looney Tune. Really. The Republican Party is just the weird little tune people that sneak out through the floorboards and the cracks between the baseboards. I can prove it. Not kidding.
My stars! Where did you ever get that awful hairdo? It doesn't become you at all. I'm gonna say, let me fix it up. How stringy and messy it is. What a shame. Such an interesting monster, too. My stars, if an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, then I don't know what things are coming to. In my business, you meet so many interesting people.
Oh, do you, Carly?
But the most interesting ones are the monsters. Oh, dear, that'll never stay. We'll just have to have a permanent...
Door labeled high explosives.
Now, I've got to give an interesting old lady a manicure, but I'll be back before you're done.
And you know, you just know that that is what Carly Fiorina would like to do to Barbara Boxer. I mean, how catty, honest to God. Let's go there again, just for the fun of it.
Order, Mamie. Sacramento. Yes. Laura saw Barbara Boxer briefly on television this morning and said what everyone says. God, what is that hair? So yesterday, you didn't...
Yeah, you didn't hear me say that. Oh, yeah, we did, Carly. We just found out that you are a catty, catty, catty woman. Not that men can't be catty, but, sister, you're catty. Because, see, that's the thing. You're not running in a beauty pageant, sweetheart. You're running for the Senate of the United States. And I don't know if no one told you, maybe you spent the entirety of your career at Hewlett-Packard having a mani and a pedi. But there is some serious work that takes place in the Senate of the United States from time to time, although we don't get as much of it as we'd like to these days because of the godforsaken repiglickens that operate there. But it's called governance. The business of governance, which is under the system of government that we have established in the Constitution of these United States.
a matter of representation of the interests. My stars, not of corporations and companies and people who give you lots of money, Carly, but of the actual people of the United States of America. I know it's a very foreign concept. Get whoever it is that does your yard work to explain popular democracy to you. Could you do that? Oh, what an interesting concept. Jesus. Yeah, that's from an appearance that she made on Sacramento's ABC TV affiliate, KXTV. And everybody thinks that it's about the Sean Hannity remark, when it's not. It's not at all about the Sean Hannity remark. It's that moment of profoundly shabby, catty, shallowness. That really. And you're just sitting there and you're talking and you're going to be on the TV box in a few minutes and they're doing your hair and then they're touching up your makeup and oh my God, there's a little bit of and the little hand reaches in with the little cotton ball and gets the little dot of sweat because we can't see Carly's sweat. And somebody comes and puts her IFB in her ear and she's completely forgotten the microphone. What? How long ago was it that I delivered the lecture on treating microphones and firearms in similar fashion? Always assume a firearm is loaded. Always assume a microphone is on. If Carly Fiorina, isn't that what they make cream of wheat out of, Fiorina? Isn't that what that is? If Carly Fiorina can't be trusted with an open mic, why in God's name would the people of California trust her with a position in the most exclusive country club on planet Earth? You know, the Senate, based on the Latin word senex, meaning old fart. What's with the hair? Well, Carly, sweetheart, you're trying to get a job in a club where a lot of the people there don't have any because they're older than dirt. What is with that bald? Can't they afford some plugs? My God, I would like to introduce a resolution mandating that all male members of the Senate, I think I just said male members, oh dear me, oh, I made funny, I'm a dirty, dirty girl. All male members, that's three times, of the Senate, have to get plugs. And none of that hair club for men stuff. We don't want to see it flapping in the breeze. We want you to have some real hair. That, because, you know, bald is so yesterday. Jesus. And I guess the question is, how many people in California will have seen this clip? And so, yeah, I do. I've been wondering about Barbara Boxer's hair. I hate myself. I do. But really, how often is it? Well, more and more often lately, it would seem. How often is it that you get to see a Republican actually turn into a cartoon character before your very eyes?
Oh, for shame! Just look at your fingernails. My, I'll bet you monstrously interesting lives. I said to my girlfriend just the other day, gee, I'll bet monsters are interesting, I said. The places you must go and the things you must see, my stars. And I'll bet you meet a lot of interesting people, too. I'm always interested in meeting interesting people. Now let's dip our patties in the water. Wow!
Yeah, that was the fingers in the mousetrap gag, whatever. Jesus. Because
Barbara Boxer is serious business. I can tell you that for personal and for real. It was March when I went to the last Progressive Media Summit there in the Senate and stood up and sort of chastised them for not getting on board with S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. And, you know, Senator Boxer came to me afterwards and said, I just want you to know this is going to happen. I know it's not happening as quickly as you want it to, but it's going to happen. And she was very earnest, and she was very serious, and she was very businesslike, and she was very real, and dare I say it, she was very senatorial. And her opponent's opening salvo is, my stars, would you look at that hair? You know, if a California senator can't have an interesting hairdo, what's this world coming to? Bobby Pence, please. Oh, that's never going to work. You're going to have a permanent. But that's where the debate is in the United States of America now. It really is. That is the reality of political discourse in this country. On the one side, you have liberals, progressives, Democrats, you know, decent human beings. And we say, damn, we're in trouble. Looks like we need to get to work and find some solutions to some problems and work on them and try to solve them. And Jesus, would you look at what's going on in the Gulf? And holy crap, 29 miners died in a gassy hole in West Virginia. And the economy's a mess. And we got work to do. What do you think, right wing of American politics? And the right wing of American politics responds to that, but boogerhead. Poopy head. Look at that hair. It's just so yesterday. My Lord. My stars. This does not bode well at all. This does not bode well at all for the next, let's see, 11 minus 6. Yeah. For about the next 5 months, this does not bode well. I can't wait to see the next attack ad from Carly Fiorina. What's it going to be? Have you seen Senator Boxer's hemlines? My stars. She looks like something out of the Brady Bunch. Vote for me. Because, you know, I'm catty. So that's where we start. It's certainly not where we finish. We've got a ton of stuff, a ton of work to do this evening. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back.
Tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on kid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a public service announcement. We'll get
there's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never.
But I won't need the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Take me down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitchell's gone and Kelly have to lose that on the list of dentals and an ongoing.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Flag the gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Wake up! Wake up!
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart. You see, it's getting late. Oh, please don't hesitate.
But for God's sakes, do something about that hair. It's so, oh, it's so yesterday.
Dear God, the shallowness of the American political discourse. And Marty writing in, you dare diss Oakland? Not that I care any. No, no, Marty, I'm not. That's not me dissing Oakland. That's Gertrude Stein dissing Oakland. She's the one who said there's no there there. So, there you go. There's lunacy abound. There's lunacy abounding this evening. Virginia Fox wants to be Joe Friday. I don't know if you happen to see that one, but that's just precious. She wants a dragnet for illegal aliens. Yeah, she wants a dragnet. This is the country, the United States of America. My name's Fox. I carry the crazy. So, no, we'll get there. We'll get there. Just be patient. But right now we are going to get to the phone, I think. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333. That saves us a little bit of money along the way. But if you need the toll-free, don't sweat it. We'll find a way. You know, I usually stand on the side of the road with a big sign that says, "Will radio for food." And then I go and I sell the food for money. It's just free market economics is all it is. Here we go. Let's get there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Vidal Sassoon?
Yes. Do you need an appointment?
Sommelier, raconteur, pig people.
Oh, God.
Listen,
isn't she just awful?
Has she not looked in the mirror lately, or has she not found one that would crack if she did?
Well, not to go too far down the shallow road, but like I said, she looks like the Carly Fiorina looks like she's been given a swirly by the boys' football, in the football team.
You know, compared to her, Alice B. Toklas is the Miss Universe.
Whoa! Oh, I had a Gertrude Stein reference. It's hardly fair not to have an Alice B. Toklas reference. But, yeah, because Alice weren't no looker.
You dare say a bad thing about her. She was a good woman.
She was!
I saw that today, and I thought to myself, who in the world do you think you are? I mean, that woman has to, if the late, great Red Fox used to say, she looks like she's had a diet of gorilla cookies.
Oh, God, it's good.
I love Red Fox. I thought he was wonderful. And all due respect to him and his memory. But, I mean, honestly and truly, he could say things in such a way that nobody else could say them, really.
Indeed. So,
anyway.
Let me ask you, Jim. How much caddy can America stand?
Not much more, because I took two to the vet this afternoon, and I can tell you I spent all the cat I can stand for the day. It was, time to get shots, time to get this, that, and the other checked and all this, and my big Rupert Brooke weighs now 18 pounds.
My God, that's not a cat, Jim, that's a cougar.
Bob, when I got him, he weighed like 7. He was on his last legs.
He's apparently living well in your domain.
Well, I try, I have a special place in my heart for animals. I'm afraid it's greater for animals than it is for most people. But anyways, that's my character flaw, I guess.
Well, but would that more people had such serious character flaws.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. I really do. Listen, number one, you had a great show. I listened to part of it. Number two, I hope your friend who's got malaria will improve. I was real sorry to hear that.
Oh, he was in tough shape, Jim. Rick Smith he'd just go back to his room and boil away with a 102, 103 degree fever. And like he said as we were talking, he said this is the four worst part of For Better or For Worse. Because apparently his lovely wife, and she is a lovely woman, had the same thing beforehand, and about 2 weeks worth of like walking pneumonia or something, and he was a miserable guy, and I'm hoping he does get better because I've got a ton of respect for him. Talk about the show must go on. That is one dedicated human being, because if I'd been as sick as he was, you couldn't have gotten me to Washington D.C.
Well, malaria is basically some forms of chronic. It just comes back. It comes back.
Well, I mean, I joked about it being malaria. It's just that, he was sitting there sweating and, the fever felt like taking mosquito netting up to his room or something.
Well, I hope he recovers quickly. And, like I say, I listened to part of it. And it was a good show. And I think you were certainly represented yourself quite well there. You really did.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. It's always interesting to go to these things because stuff happens on the fly and you're not necessarily ready for them and you just sort of have to swim with the current that you're in. But I have to give a big credit to the staff there, the folks who put it together from the Campaign for America's Future. They did a magnificent job, especially Cedric and Jen. The two people most responsible for pulling together the radio row. It was excellent work done.
I think the entire broadcast was handled with considerable aplomb.
Well, thank you very much. We're getting a little bit better at it. There have been times when I just sat there sweating bullets, trying to make things work. Getting one particular piece of equipment into the setup made all the difference in the world.
How was the Omni Shore?
It's wonderful, Jim. It's just... It's a beautiful place. Like I said, it kind of doesn't look like so much from the outside, but it sits there against Rock Creek Park, and you walk in, and it is a grand dame hotel from days gone by. You couldn't build that hotel now for any amount of love nor money. Marble floors, marble this, you know, everything just top shelf. Oh.
It does have a certain elegance to it, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And the history that it has. I went and found Harry Truman's secret entrance where he used to sneak in after he became president. He would sneak in and go and play poker with his old Senate pals. And
really?
they built him a separate entrance where nobody would see him coming or going.
I thought they did all that at that room off the Capitol called the Board of Education, you know, where they used to go in there and drink and all this stuff.
Right, but he had a couple of Senate buddies who actually lived there, and they had a poker night, and he would show up and play a few hands and just, you know, just hang out. Can you imagine that happening in the 21st century, in 21st century D.C., you know, with that mob of Secret Service that follows the, you know, they follow the president probably to the bathroom the way they used to do with Louis XIV.
Oh, yeah, they do. Well, they have to, Bob. I mean, I saw this thing last night about the presidential limousine, and that thing's just incredible. I mean, you know, good God, it weighs, I don't know how many tons and costs at least, I don't know how many million dollars to retrofit and, you know, but it's necessary, really. And, you know, it's really a traveling piece of a traveling armored car, the likes of which I've never seen before.
And the other thing I made sure and got a photograph of, in 1964, the first time the Beatles went to Washington, D.C., they rented an entire wing of the then just Shoreham. It wasn't the Omni Shoreham, just the Shoreham. And the Shoreham has gotten hold of a set list for the show that they were going to play. John Lennon sat down and wrote the set list, and it's now enshrined in a little glass case. And I made sure and got a picture of that.
Well, I'm certain that will be a very nice souvenir. You know,
not near as nice as having the actual thing, but I wasn't willing to bust the glass, and I was trying to be a well-behaved hillbilly.
Good, 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 because D.C. jails aren't very nice. Not that I know from any personal experience. I've heard some bad things about them.
Know where I want to be.
Listen, last night, Cossack called,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to make a comment about what he said, if I may.
Do please.
First, I wish him well in his progress to recovery. I really do. And obviously, he is of Russian ancestry. And he makes some comments about the Russian people, which, I've always been an ardent Russophile. And when you think of that country and the contributions it has made in the worlds of literature. I mean, we're talking about Gogol, we're talking about Dostoevsky, we're talking about Chekhov and so many others, and in music, like Mussorgsky, Rimsky-Korsakov.
Tchaikovsky, Tolstoy, yeah.
Brodin, just incredible. And, you know, Prokofiev in the Soviet era and other things. And, you know, the Russian people are a good people, and they have suffered so much. And I had the opportunity to meet Eugene Yevtushenko, or Yevgeny Yevtushenko. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
I actually met him, and it was at a lecture that he gave, and they had books on the concourse of the Coliseum where it was given, and I had an old tattered book that I had bought when I was in college, and he autographed it, and he took it out of my hand, and he said, "How long have you had this?" And I said, "At least 7 years. I've always admired your poetry." And, you know, in front of all those people, and there were lots of KG people with him at the time. And he just grabbed me and gave me a big hug and kissed me on both cheeks, and he said, "Thank you so much." And, you know, in one of his poems, he spoke about the Russian people. He said, "We've been invaded by so many," and I'm paraphrasing here. The Varangians, the Tatars, the Swedes, the Germans, but he said, but by our own people, worse than any of them, referring to some of the governments they have had. And so, you know, my hat is off to the Russian people and the sacrifices that Cossack mentioned last night that they made in World War II, 20 to 30 million people. We'll really never know how many they did lose because so many of them became nameless numbers on lists which were carelessly mislaid, you know?
You know, he wrote one called The Torments of Conscience.
Yes, he did.
That says, we live, dying is not our business. Shame is another lost episode that, like an unseen Madonna, conscience is standing at every crossroad. And I read that a long time ago, Jim, way back in school. And I think that sort of has always stuck with me because, you know, it's that, and I talk about these kind of things from time to time because that issue of as a consumer or what we are called consumers, I hate that word with a purple passion. As participants in our own economy, we find ourselves almost. Well, we have to wall off our consciences simply to exist in a commercial economy. And one of the he was the one that poem was the one that sort of made that light go on.
Exactly, and in one of the poems, in one of his poems, and also as part of the lecture he gave, and this was at the height of the Cold War. And he was wishing then how the Americans that the Russians could beat once again as they did in Germany when they finally won over the Axis or Adolf Hitler. And I just felt that man had an immensely good heart. You know, in Russia, poets are respected so much more there than they are here.
Absolutely. And I think of it in the same vein, Jim, that I think of reverence that the game of chess is afforded in Russia and the countries of the former Soviet Union when you can barely get a kid to think about it here.
And here's the thing, for example, when the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union, the first thing they did was to evacuate the homes of Tolstoy, Tchaikovsky, and gather their possessions and everything because they were shrines and museums. I mean, that was one of the first priorities they had. Of course, they had other things to take care of, like the museum at the Heritage and things like that. But I was thinking, should an invading army fling itself upon our shores, I wonder how much priority would be given to the home of William Faulkner or other American writers to preserve them from an invading enemy.
Oh, I know, and it reminds me and I will screw up the pronunciation, Hemingway's La Finca Vigia, the old farm in Cuba. They still reverence that place. It's falling down. They don't have the money to keep it up to where it ought to be because of, among other things, the U.S. blockade, the stupid, stupid U.S. blockade of Cuba. But there's a reverence for it. On the other hand, if you're on the island of Key West, which will soon be encircled in BP crude, you can pay a tidy sum and go see the Hemingway house there that he barely lived in for 2 years when he was married to who? Pauline, I think.
I think so.
And it's a tourist attraction. And the most interesting thing there is the urinal that he carried from Sloppy Joe's bar to serve as a watering trough for his many cats.
Oh yeah, those cats still survive, and they all have six claws. They're special cats.
Yes.
And they're descendants of his pets. It's incredible. But you know, if you go back now, when I went back and when I went to visit the Soviet Union, I visited Tchaikovsky's Dacha, and everything was there, just as if he were going to walk in the front door. At his dressing table, all the hairbrushes were laid out. All of his astringents, whatever. And if you go to Tolstoy's place at Yasnaya Polyana, the writer's colony, Peredelkino, everything is there. It looks just like the man is just fixing to walk into the door. The table is set for dinner. It's under glass, of course, the dishes. And it's the the respect these people have for their heritage and the heritage of their artists, whether they're composers, musicians, writers, whatever, is truly amazing to me. It really is. And, you know, my hat's off to Cossack and what he said last night and the sacrifices that the Russians made. I mean, for every 8 German soldiers killed, 7 were killed by the Russians. If it had not been for them, we would have lost that war.
Well, the Normandy couldn't have happened, which reminds me of something that I've got to bring up later in the program. You know, there was very little marking of the D-Day invasion this past Sunday, but I was really proud of the fact that our very own Reverbo did a magnificent job remembering June the 6th, 1944. Jim, it's awfully good to hear from you, and we will talk soon.
But there was one thing, if I may.
Certainly.
I discussed this with your wife, and we're talking about, this is a quantum leap here, the people who are trying to clean up this mess in the Gulf, these workers.
Yes.
And, you know, the animals there have been disturbed terribly, the ones that are still alive. And I saw this article from the health writer for MSNBC, and she was talking about the danger of the snakes there. For example, you've got 3 types of rattlesnakes, and, of course, you've got cottonmouth water moccasins, which are highly dangerous because they're such an inquisitive snake. But in addition to that, we have the coral snake. There are no supplies of antivenin for coral snakes left. Wyeth made it. When Pfizer bought out Wyeth, they discontinued it. We may have enough coral snake antivenin to last until October. Now, basically, these snakes are very retiring, too. But these animals have been very seriously disturbed. And for those people who are going into those wetlands and trying to clean up this mess, they are really in some serious danger because of this. But the supplies of antivenin are very low, and the only company that manufactures a coral snake antivenin is in Mexico, and it's not yet FDA approved.
Dear Lord, there are ramifications to all this that we have not yet begun to contemplate, aren't there?
Well, I mean, can you imagine going into a nest of water moccasins or being on the business end of a coral snake? And
oh, no, see, I just got done rewatching. You remember the seminal miniseries from the late 80s, Lonesome Dove?
Mm-hmm.
There is that scene, and it exists in the book as well, where the young cowboy gets attacked while crossing the river. He and his horse get into a whole nest of water moccasins, and he gets killed. And that thing, when I read it and then saw it, that thing just gives me the blind horrors at the mere thought of it.
Oh, absolutely. And the reason I brought this up is because we're talking about disaster preparedness. And if that isn't a very significant element of disaster preparedness, I don't know what is, particularly when people are going to have to go in there and physically, if they can ever get this monster plugged, and try to recover some of the wetlands, some of which we'll never be able to recover, I don't think. But, I mean, it's just an element of lack of preparedness and lack of foresight. And the fact that we don't have a drug company in this country that manufactures an antivenin or antivenom serum, I mean, it absolutely blew my mind. But before it again, I really wasn't that surprised, to tell you the truth, because Pfizer said, it just doesn't make us any money.
Right. Why would we want that on hand?
They said that it was just a product that did not sell. They didn't have much use for it. So it has been discontinued. And if somebody gets bitten by a coral snake or whatever, well, good luck. The only thing is, they'll suffocate because it's a very serious neurotoxin, and you literally drown while you're on dry land because you can't, you know, they have to put you in a respirator and use a process called intubation. And with no antivenin, and this not only goes for the coral snake, for which there's little to none, but for the other two, the rattlesnakes and, of course, the very dangerous cottonmouth water moccasins. And like I say, those snakes will actually come in. They will come after you.
Yo, they're mean.
I mean, most snakes, you know, they will get out of your way if you give them enough time or if you don't step on them. But a water moccasin is, and I grew up in the South, and I've seen my share of them, and I've killed my share of them. Let me tell you, they are inquisitive, and then after they find out what they are looking for, they go after you. They strike. And I've had one or two chase me that I've had to kill with a bush axe. I didn't have a pistol or a rifle. I had to kill those things with a bush axe. And I'm going to tell you, it was not a pleasant experience, and I'll never forget it.
It is the latter is obvious by virtue of the fact that you recruit. Because I can, yeah, I can imagine the whole.
Well, I mean, before I went to school, my father thought it was a good idea to get me a job with the highway department, cutting right-of-ways for the highway department. And when you're working in like 105-degree heat in a swamp, you're right in the middle of these things. And that's how I encountered two of them. So,
careful or I'll have water moccasin nightmares, Jim.
Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And, you know, we need to really do some serious thinking. Our government does. And talk to these drug companies. But I know there are going to be some problems with that when they get these people in there, if they ever can. If BP will ever get off its ass and do what they're supposed to do and take this thing seriously.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear, Jim. Well said, my friend.
All right. Well, listen, glad you're back. Glad you had a safe trip. And have a good show tonight.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Take care.
Good night, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
Jim always brings good stuff to the table, and if I get a little time, I think it would be well to share all of Evgeny Evtushenko's "The Torments of Conscience," 1966, dedicated to Dmitri Shostakovich. It's stunning. It is absolutely stunning. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so you lucked out with, I guess you definitely did marry up, didn't you?
a little bit.
No, your wife is just lovely. Had a funny...
Well, see why I miss her back here in the producing chair?
Well, no, she said, told me, no way, you know, in hell, basically.
Oh, no, she won't come back. She did that as a favor, and I will be working off the Ozies for a while.
I know. I thought it was kind of funny. She just said, oh, no, she can't do it. but, no, she ran it all right, though, while you were gone, for sure.
Oh, she knows what she's doing. Yeah, she's right. Yeah, she's more than competent. She originally left the producing chair mainly because there were 3 hours a night that were prime homework hours. When we had three kids in elementary and middle school who, needed someone sitting there saying, do your homework.
Yeah, she can't do both, that's for sure, because I know that producing seems like it's full on anyway.
It will take some time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, otherwise what, you just sort of have it set up so you do it yourself, or do you have remote? Producing?
No. I sit here and do it all myself. Now, what she was doing last night was, doing it remotely with John.
Right. No.
And back in the earliest days of the Horn, when we had, you know, there was a time when the Horn had a schedule that was every bit in direct competition in terms of quality and quantity with what Air America was doing.
You had like sort of. Multiple talent.
Yeah, we had a bunch of shows, and you know, of course, with the model we're working on, you know, the nobody gets paid model.
Yeah.
People like Joe Vecchio had to go out and find a way to continue staying alive.
Right. No, I vaguely remember, you know, when you guys had more of a lineup for sure, but like you said, people. Can't survive on air alone.
That's the absolute truth.
Anyway, right. So, I guess I'm stuck on the Arkansas that business sort of, you know, kind of made a lot of things crystal clear, don't you think?
Yeah, I got to thinking about Barack Obama, and I guess as president, he can't just come out and be for the other guy, because otherwise all those other incumbent Democrats would tell him to go Cheney himself.
No, but what he did was way beyond. This fool, you know, take the commercial telling black folks they need to vote for that dumb bitch, and it, I mean, it's so disingenuous. I can't even describe it because she ain't interested in helping.
And she, you know, she proved where she stood today. I don't know if you followed that vote on the Lisa Murkowski thing.
The Murkowski, is that more of the eliminating the caps?
No, this was the one where, this was the one where the Senate was going to declare that the EPA did not have a right to do science and regulate CO2.
Oh, how did that come out? I didn't know. How did that come out?
Well, that vote went down today, and thankfully, Lisa Murkowski's, you know, it's not really an amendment. It was a power play. It failed. It failed.
Okay.
Every Republican voted for it. The vote came up 53-47 because six no good corporate Democrats crossed the aisle to vote with all the Republicans. And those six, the mugwump, blue dog, good for nothing Democrats were Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, you know, the usual suspects, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Evan Bayh, and Jay Rockefeller.
Right. I mean, the thing is, and it's sort of, you know, I have to say, I thought we were hearing all the time that, oh, we can't do anything that's going to help the people, oh, because we don't have the votes because of these certain Democrats. So you're going to go ahead and send Bill Clinton down, and you're going to record a commercial telling your blinded base, you know, which is what I'm calling the black folks. It's like, wow. Because this one, I was reading an article, I think I was reading either Glenn Greenwald or something, but the woman said, oh, we don't know much about her, but Obama said to vote for her, so, and dot, 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 you know, you finish the rest. And it's just like, huh?
Yeah, why not just stay out of it? But no, sending Clinton down, and frankly, what bothers me more than anything else, I think, is this snarky, pissy little bit of smacking around that took place afterwards with a White House staffer, unnamed, of course. Daring to lecture labor and tell them that they threw their money away trying to defeat Blanche Lincoln. Well, what was labor supposed to do, Sandra?
Well, no. What is, you know, no, it's sort of, the guy said we're not an appendage of the Democrat. I mean, at least they shot back, which I thought was quite interesting. And to me, I think the Obama administration, they're showing so many kind of rookie moves because, yeah, you go ahead and alienate them people. Because when you want people to man phone banks, guess what?
That's what labor does very, very well.
When you want them to walk the streets, what else? What? Guess what? I mean, it's like amateur hour because I don't know what they were trying to prove, but people will go somewhere else or not vote if they keep acting and showing what they really are, which is no dimes difference between them and a Republican. And I say that, you know, loosely because I'm not really a big believer in that, but I'm starting to wonder, really, about the Democratic Party.
Well, it's certainly the truth when it comes to Blanche Lincoln. It's certainly the truth when it comes to Ben Nelson. It is unquestionably the truth when it comes to Mary Landrieu, Sandra.
No, but see, they hide behind that as a means of not getting shit done, but they lie to our faces because they know the majority of Democrats have a different agenda in mind, not one involving covering the asses of multinational conglomerates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know what's weird out of this vote today?
Yeah.
Did you notice the names that weren't there?
Oh, no, I know. I don't.
Well, Holy Joe Lieberman actually voted on the right side of this one.
Oh, is that because he's coming? He has to run soon or something?
No, it's because of all the creepy things he's done. Lieberman can usually be counted on to get environmental stuff right.
Okay, whatever. How bizarre.
Yeah, but the fact that she did this the day after she won in the primary, enjoy it while it lasts, Blanche, because I think she's going to become dependent upon the kindness of strangers here real soon, seeing as how, Boozman, another one of those names you couldn't get away with putting it in your novel, because you're going to have to change his name. That's too obvious. No, that Repiglick and Boozman owns her to the tune of somewhere between 20 and 40 points right now.
Well, no, that's the thing. It's like she's going to, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, this dog is going to lose because why the hell are you going, to vote for her when you can vote for a real one? Need I bring in Truman? You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Bless her heart, that's another one of those Barbara Boxer moments. She asked, what are we going to do next? Vote against the law of gravity?
That's what she said?
Yeah.
Shut the hell up. Listen, that speaking of that, that bitch over here, that HP hatchet bitch, she tripping.
Oh.
You know what the hell she bit off? Boxer don't mess.
No, Barbara will eat her, I hope.
She has dismissed other people who thought they was going to get a play. I was like, damn, the last time she ran against someone who thought they had a little chance, oh, my God. It was like, hello, meet the bitch. She don't miss. So, good luck to this woman. She's terrible anyway, because one of the things she said besides this mess today was, well, if I had to cut 10,000 jobs again, I would. It's like, where you at, bitch? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know who's running her. She's horrific. And she got nerves talking about somebody's hair if you want to get into the ditch. What does she look like?
Well, that's what I said. She looks like she was given a swirly by the football team, just dipped upside down in the toilet till, because, no. Oh, she's awful.
No, she's been terrible, though, because what she did, she's like outsourcing queen. I mean, she kind of started it, and then she got fired. Can I repeat that?
Right, and that's the thing,
And got fired.
And yet, if apparently we're that's all down the memory hole that she got fired. Maybe that's one of those things that our side needs to be working on, because she is telling the world that in fact no, she grew BP.
No, it's just lies. And she also
got not BP. I'm sorry, HP. Too many P's. Oh.
Whatever, it's all the same. She got dismissed by McCain, too. Let that be known. So, she obviously has some, well, as we saw, some people issues. Once again, it's like these freaks running in politics who don't have a clue about how to deal with the public, but they want to run government like a business. Come on, man. So, yeah.
Haven't we been down that road? Don't we remember when pig-eyed and jug-eared, former dim leader said that he wanted to run the government the way Enron runs its business. He actually cited Enron.
No, it's just too much. It's like, California is the last goddamn state that needs freaking Whitman, who's another one that's totally scary. Wow. Jerry Brown already challenged, bitch. And I'm sorry to be like that, but that's what these women are. They're terrible. Challenged her to a debate. She's like, huh? What? Oh, he needs to release more policy. Jerry freaking Brown? He needs to release policy? Come on, bitch. Get on the stage. So I can't wait.
this could be interesting. The next 5 months could be a real, real horror show. And I feel sorry for anybody who turns on the television for the next 5 months in the state of California or the radio.
Oh, no, it's...
Because I think this is a pretty good indication of where Carly Fiorina is going to go.
Oh, no, she's terrible. You remember her laser cows? Wasn't that her with the laser lambs?
Yeah, demon sheep.
Right. So, and they keep talking about that video maker who's some sort of rising star, amongst the conservative political campaign people. But, if we're going to see more of that, you know, floating livestock, bring it on. I can't wait. I got to get my popcorn. You know what I mean?
Oh, that, yeah. As somebody who watches politics, yeah, you're going to be loving that. Let me ask you a question and sort of run off topic here for a minute. You sent me the story earlier about the British pensioners getting a little bit antsy about what's happening to BP.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was hella interesting, that article.
New York Times story that basically says that pensioners in the UK for whom BP provides £1 out of every eight.
It's a big deal over there.
It's been a big deal over there. Are really upset at this notion that maybe BP ought not declare a dividend this quarter.
How about not investing in some pernicious, rapacious piece of shit corporation? I ain't got no...
Score, exactly. That's exactly where I was going.
They are begging, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I wrote to you? I said to read the comments. The comments,
and I did.
The hook. People are like, you got to be out of your goddamn mind. And I was really impressed by the consistency of the hatred that was going on. Okay? You saw them. I've never seen comments like that in the New York Times. People are lit.
And see, the reason I bring this up is, you know, A, it's fascinating to watch people get upset about it, but you came up with the immediate obvious answer, and that is, let's not have our pensions invested in predatory corporations like BP, you know, because those chickens do have an ugly habit of coming home to roost, Sandra. And the reason I brought it up is because at the same time, earlier today, my dear friend Bo Webb, a fellow activist in the fight against mountaintop removal, and one who's got more dogs in the hunt than I do, because he literally lives directly underneath one of these nightmare Massey operations, sent me a story. And you might find this interesting, being as you are a Californian as well. California teachers' pension sues Massey Energy.
Oh.
The public pension for California's teachers is joining two other investors in suing Massey Energy Company, accusing the company of having an abysmal safety record leading up to an April disaster that killed 29 people, yada, yada, yada. They said they teamed up with Amalgamated Bank and Manville Trust as plaintiffs in a shareholder lawsuit against Massey officers and directors filed in Kanawha County, West Virginia Circuit Court. Now, on the one hand, good. Sue. Get more money out of Don Blankenship and the rest of that filthy corporation's pocket. Good. I'm all for it. But at some point in time, whether it is nervous pensioners in the UK or nervous pensioners in California, a question has to be asked, Sandra. And that question is, what are you doing invested in these organizations?
And with the BP thing, how do you like the taste of managed state capitalism now? How you like it? Because that's what that is, the BP and British thing. That shit is so immersed and intertwined, it's not even funny. So it's really interesting that it has taken on a freaking international incident, which is what it's going to do. But see, my question is, let's watch what the Obama administration does with this, because, you know, they got to keep their troops in Iraq and they got to do all this. So, in Afghanistan. So I'm wondering, Obama is in a hell of a place, Bob. Hell of a place.
I wouldn't be there for love nor money.
And, oh, my God. Because that, the whole notion of these pigs moaning about a dividend payout when their country has destroyed or in the process of causing some calamity that we can't even wrap our head around. Oh, no. No wonder the comments were like they were.
Dare go there, Sandra. Can you imagine if this was Venezuela's platform, if this was a Citgo platform?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about it.
Bombs would be raining on Caracas.
Oh, no, it would be totally a whole different thing. And it's, no, the British angle is starting to get really interesting because I guess they're really freaking out. What's going on? But if you look at the amount of money you're starting to talk about, and that's where everything.
Yeah, that's the kind. Yeah, those are numbers where you, the kind of numbers where your eyes roll back into the back of your head.
Yeah,
just trying to contemplate all the zeros.
So, you know, here we are trying to, what? We're going to have a, we live in a time where we have to wonder if the president of our country has to weigh this bullshit before he deals with a company that's in the wrong. There is no gray area here. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do completely. And the question that I would pose arising out of all of this, Sandra, is simply, whatever happened to the concept of ethical divestiture?
No,
I mean, what happened with South Africa? And I ask that specifically because young Donnie Blankenship, with his dead beady eyes, cut his teeth doing deals with the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Right.
And you know what? Those attitudes never change. And frankly, I think it's time, you know, I would, you know me, wherever I go, I will find a way to stop and talk to somebody about mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
And I just spent the last two or three days trying to drive the point home to people that this, that what's going on in the Gulf, and I've said it before and I'll keep saying it until everybody else is saying it with me, what's going on in the Gulf and what happened, what happens every day in Appalachia with the 3.5 million pounds of high explosives that are used here are separate loops in the same toxic, deadly bow. And Tony Hayward is the same guy as Don Blankenship, and BP is the same corporation as Massey Energy. There is not a dime's worth of difference, and I would give my eye teeth, I really would, to sit down with whoever runs the California teachers' retirement system and ask them, tell them exactly what is going on in Appalachia and ask them, how can you, in good conscience, have a damn dime's worth of your retirees, teachers, who spend their lives working on opening young minds and creating, hopefully, futures for young people. How can you have a dime of their money in a company like Massey? Sorry, not yelling at you. You know the drill.
I don't know. Shit. No, please. It's unbelievably stunning. And to me, there's a sort of bubble that people reside in. It's like, you know what? Connect the damn dots. I was, like, reading that story, and I just thought, you got to be out of your mind with this. And they're nervous. You know, what about the destruction that's going on? It's incredible. It's the fourth largest corporation, I think, on the planet, ain't it?
I do believe you're.
Okay, listen. Dim the brakes. You are a stockholder. That means risk. Read about your company. It's too late with the bitching and moaning. I was just stunned by even the hubris of it. But on the other hand, you know, England is in such dire straits. This isn't really surprising me, you know, with the whole budget situation. And it's funny how this is turning into, it's starting to really, I don't want to say snowball, but the interconnectedness is just sort of mind-boggling, actually, Bob. So.
Yeah, it is. It really, really is.
But I'm sort of concerned, you know, with this administration because I don't have no confidence from past actions in their confronting this sort of power.
Yeah.
Because it's similar to the banks, this corporation. It's not like some.
Yeah, you don't want to get too uppity with them.
Well, it's not like the car industry. You know, they didn't seem to have no problems running roughshod over that. But they seem to be in collusion with keeping reporters out.
Well, that's because, but you know what, Sandra? That's because car people, car companies make stuff.
Oh.
And what I was told time after time after time at the America's Future Now conference was that this administration, and not just this administration, but the previous ones and the Clinton administration, they've all got disdain for making stuff.
because we live in a post-industrial culture and society, and we're and globalization is the new watchword for the new frontier, and we've got to have free trade. And, it was Clyde Prestowitz who told me that. He said, I said, what is it? Do they just look at you like you got two heads? He goes, no, they look at me like I'm Satan when I try to talk to them about manufacturing and industry and having those kinds of jobs in America, because they've wholly bought into this economic notion, and that's all it is. It's not grounded in fact that all will be better if we can just stop making things and everybody be part of a grand and glorious service economy.
Oh, and that would explain why every other day I'm reading about the freak out that's going on in the financial media over, oh, look, some fucking workers in China want some more damn money. So, you know, this they are now starting to say, we had one generation of our parents doing this shit. We won't, and we want more money. And they're getting it. And so now you're getting freak outs here about, oh, you know, it's going to, labor's going to start costing. But what happens when you shift all American know-how, all American capital, and you get to pay people 25 cents an hour?
It all goes away pretty damn quick, I think, as we've seen.
Yeah, and so it's just a bunch of BS. But guess what?
Sooner or later, the guys wanting the 25 cents an hour are going to want a raise, too.
Yeah, that's what's going on. And because China is a, you know, no election having dictatorship, the state can just facilitate that, and they're doing that because they have to maintain power too. And they said they're not going out with a new revolution.
No, I heard things that made my hair stand on end the last couple of days. Things like and I don't know how I missed this one. Things like President Obama saying that he wants to help China develop a jet airliner industry, and that American know-how will go toward helping China design their first superliner.
Right, but you understand the key common denominator is the destruction of bargaining labor. That's
yes.
Like the key. So if you can transfer all this technology and know-how all around the world, and you can minus the labor, well, shit, it's profits galore.
And it's pure Milton Friedman. I mean, can we just remember that and nail that one to the church house door next door to whatever it was Martin Luther nailed up? It's all Milton Friedman. And Milton Friedman despised working people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read his opinions about unions. Trust me. It's just like, hello, serfdom much?
Yeah, and you know, look, as I'm being reminded by David in Tennessee, on the other hand, look at Germany. And Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing said the same thing. Look at Germany. They have some quotas. They have some content restrictions, some content requirements. And lo and behold, they've got a workforce that gets 6 paid vacation weeks off a year, and they make great stuff.
And they have workers who sit on the board.
Oh, I know.
Corporations.
Oh, the horror.
Don't fall out. No, listen.
And the nice thing about China, though, is that when they start striking for 35 cents an hour instead of 25 cents, you know what you can do when you're China? You can line them up and shoot them.
Well, that's...
Because you've got lots of people who want those jobs.
Yeah, but the problem is now, though, is that they're having labor shortages beyond in China because of their lovely one-child policy. That shit's coming to bite them in the ass. Also, China did a stimulus, a huge one, not like this bullshit here, a massive one, where they had workers running back to the agriculture sector. You hear what I'm saying? They're like groovy. Like, get me out of this factory. And China's not stupid. They don't want to be doing this shit forever. The leader said that. We don't want to be this workshop making cheap stuff forever. So China's moving on. China is a beggar thy neighbor, mercantilist type of situation.
And man, is that a word that got a lot of work the last couple of days. And, you know, I haven't heard mercantilist since you know, history classes undergrad.
Well,
but it is back with a vengeance because that because people are recognizing, well, you know, the genius class isn't, well, but no, people who actually care about working people are openly referring to China as mercantilist now.
Yeah, it's definitely, and that's what they've always been about. They've always been strong, sovereign-centric nation. Then they ain't all about this globalization. Not at all. Trust me. They're handling their shit. And it's very interesting to watch. When they came out with that stimulus, I was like, I'd be goddamn, you know?
I mean, and see, that's one of the things that makes me getting to go to these things so very important on my end of the stick, Sandra, is that I get 2 days of really, really incredibly intelligent people sitting across from me within a couple of feet educating me. I mean, I try to ask an intelligent question here or there, and hopefully it's as good for the rest of the Horn family as it is for me. But I'm actually, it's like sitting with a PhD econ professor, which a bunch of these guys were, and having them explain to me the lunacy of the globalist cabal. And I, you know, I couldn't buy that. I couldn't buy that on the free market. So, you know, I owe a great debt of gratitude to folks, in particular, in this instance, the Campaign for America's Future, because they made me smarter. They made me more aware. And one of the most frustrating things for me coming out of this, Sandra, is that, you know, we were doing our part to get all this information, and it was vital information. It's available in the archives and everything. We were doing our part to get this information out to the Horn family. But, God, I look around, and I'm reminded of that horrifying statistic that for every hour of liberal talk in this country, there are 1,000 hours of idiotic, stupid, bigoted, prejudiced, freakish right-wing babble.
Yeah, I think it really is such an upward battle. And plus some of the issues, when you start talking about this sort of global stuff, it's pretty eyes-glaze-over type of stuff, except it's affecting our lives, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's us they're screwing with.
You know, and it's kind of like when I hear people going on and on about the whole China threat, I'm just like, oh, no, please. And, you know, because it's not enough hours in the day for me to be able to explain some of this.
No, and that's the thing. You know, China, these are the guys, they've got copies of Sun Tzu in the original Chinese. The nuance of translation is not lost on them, and they're using it on us. You know, because if you somewhere along the way, you've read The Art of War, have you not, Sandra?
So, you know, to be honest, some of it, but I never really kind of got deep into it, so.
Well, early on, one of the first things it says is, the greatest victory is not to fight at all. And while the right wing runs around and says, well, you know, they're building 26 naval vessels for every one we build, and they're building missiles, and you remember the right wing having a fit over L'Oreal in the Clinton years, and they're giving away our technology to the Chi-Coms. Well, they don't want to fight us. Why fight us when we can facilitate our own demise?
And they're just waiting, you know.
And you know what? Waiting is cheap.
No, and the thing is, it's just, I mean, they're so long-term, it's frightening.
And again, that goes back to not having to translate Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
They've got it memorized. So, no, we're in trouble. We don't, that those poor little fools of the right wing can't even begin to comprehend.
Oh, yeah.
You remember when Khrushchev said, we will conquer you without firing a shot?
Right.
Well, they did have somebody translate that out of Russian. And they went, yeah. Yeah. Because we're going to be here, and you're not, Nikita.
No, it's incredible. I mean, and the thing is that the U.S. is as useful to China as they need us. And then they'll just move on. You see what I mean?
I mean, I got little lectures in the overvalue. I had no idea the dollar was overvalued. And you know, when I heard that one, my little ears got all hot and red. And overvalued? And got it explained to me and how that works in conjunction with
with the manipulation of the yuan and everything. And suddenly, and you know, what Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing was telling me, I said, we're being fattened like a sheep for the slaughter. And he said, you could say that.
Well, no, but the whole dollar regime, the whole dollar hegemony is so dubious because it will come to an end. And that's a big problem, you know, at least short term for the whole world. I don't know. I find the whole thing really disturbing, what's going on, and just the lack of information, because information is everything, you know. Like you said, you were able to get pretty much schooled up there for 2 days.
And I would give anything for you know, a lot of folks on the horn got to hear it. But you know what? The people who know minutia about the individual lives of the contestants on American Idol, they need to hear it too, because it's really quite intriguing. It's quite exciting. It's quite stirring, and more terrifying than any Stephen King novel I've ever read.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, shoot. Why do you think I, majored in international relations? Come on, it's endlessly interesting. I I'm kind of borderline obsessed, and yeah, it's great, you know, on that tip. But it's scary when you see the machinations that are going on, and you know, I'm really worried about the administration, because I just think it's amateur hour. Amateur hour.
Well, I'm going to ask you a real. If they get four more years, will they have figured it out in time for the second administration?
Well, you got all these Bush people just waiting around to get their jobs back. As far as I can tell, I know. What can I say? I'm getting really sardonic at this point, Bob. I'm not saying I'm done with the Obama administration, but they keep making.
Is that another word for jaded?
Yeah, jaded. They keep making really effed up moves.
The thing that I find myself asking myself, Sandra, is don't they know that these moves are that way?
Well, for example, Susan Rice talking about, you know, there she was sitting at the Security Council looking grand, talking about the sanctions for Iran, and I'm like, oh my God, is this still being pushed?
I heard that and I thought.
Weren't you making overtures to them earlier on?
You know, and if you're Turkey and Brazil, how do you feel?
Exactly, and you know, Brazil ain't no joke.
No, they're not. They're figuring stuff out in a hurry.
And they're making big moves to try to get their asses as a permanent member. You know that regime is going to be coming down, because to have these five members, especially Britain, what the hell? Britain with a veto. No. See, that all that is, they're totally irrelevant if they don't change up. And Brazil's waiting in the wings.
As well they should be.
Anyway, listen, we could go on and on and on about this.
Well, you know what? At some point we will.
Yeah. But I'll let you go, because I know you got other things.
Well, I know. And by all means, enjoy the rapidly expanding Pac-10 while you're out there.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, USC. Can I tell you?
Have they been announced? Have the sanctions been announced?
Yeah, that bitch has got 2 years of bowl ineligibility, and they lost 30 scholarships. Can you say done?
Can you say Kid Kiffin wasn't planning on this?
That dumbass. Oh, well, it's hilarious for that. It's hilarious on that tip. He can still rest in the comfort that quarterback from Oakland was a bust in the end. So he was right about that.
That's about all he's got now.
Yeah.
I did see one report come down the pike that said he was livid. Kiffin is livid.
Oh, it's whatever. He decided to sell Tennessee down. Was it Tennessee he was working for?
Yeah.
Tennessee down the road to get his old dream job when his old boss fucked him and went and got an NFL job. It's hilarious.
And that tinkling sound off in the distance, that merry jingling noise, that's Pete Carroll's cash register.
Oh, no. Pete Carroll is, you know, come on now. It's hilarious. Another thing about sports is, why is Homeboy going to Cleveland? Oh, I'm just going. Why is he in Cleveland? From Michigan, the basketball coach.
Oh yeah. Oh, the Beeline. No.
What is his name? He, you know, he's been to the Final Four nonstop. He was there this year, Michigan State.
No. Yeah, I know who you're. Yeah, I can't remember his name right now.
Right.
Yeah, Michigan.
He told his crew, oh, I'm just going to go and talk about it.
I'm going down for a corned beef sandwich.
But he ain't going to leave Michigan without LeBron signing. So I don't know what dance they're playing. You see.
Yeah, that's Tommy. Yeah, thanks to our sports correspondent David. Yeah, that's Tom Izzo, Michigan State.
Oh,
yeah,
Izzo.
Yeah. See, I get all pissed off every time I hear Michigan because I think of either Rich Rodriguez or John Beilein. You know, Beilein was our basketball coach. Rodriguez was our football coach, and up to Michigan.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let me let you go. I gotta go.
All right, we'll see you, Sandra. You take care.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Bye now. You know what? Even if you're not a sports geek or a sports nerd like I am, watching this business with the football conferences is a lesson in predatory capitalism. That is all it is. Study it. Look at it. Have a look. You might be surprised. I think we've seen this model in operation somewhere before, and it all looks good on the front end, but man, when it goes bust, it sucks. So we're about halfway through the program tonight. By all means, let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, welcome back, Brother Bob.
Well, thank you kindly.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. About halfway rested up. You know, these are long drives.
Yeah, I know what you mean. From D.C., everything is a long drive.
Well, you know, the frustrating thing was I stayed... You know, it was over at noon yesterday, the conference was, but I stayed long so that I could go and see the press conference with Ashley Judd at the National Press Club, which put me on the road at 3 p.m. on I-66 westbound out of D.C., where I essentially parked. I went 35 miles in 2 hours.
You don't know the thing about the blow-up doll?
Pardon?
You don't know the trick about the blow-up doll?
No.
You can get into the...
No, that one wasn't moving either. That's the whole thing. I-66 is a parking lot, no matter what lane you're in.
True. You realize that D.C. has the honor of having the second worst traffic in the nation, superseded only by Los Angeles.
Isn't Atlanta a little bit worse?
No.
I'll be
damned. This third.
Well, it was frustrating as hell. And so the rest of the way, I was, you know, once I got out of that mess, I went to the whip. My rental vehicle was a Volkswagen Jetta, and I worked that little four-banger engine as hard as I think it'll ever be worked.
What, no nitrous?
No. It was... normally aspirated.
Oh. Well, I'm told nitrous will get you up there. Probably blow your engine, too. But.
Well, but yeah, it'll get me up there, too. Dude, the rush.
But a couple of things. First, I want to thank Jim for his kind comments. I thoroughly appreciate that.
Yeah, Jim is a true Russophile. And if he doesn't know it about Russian culture, it ain't worth knowing.
I can see that. Trust me. And I also want to thank Sandra. I keep on forgetting to, but she is just such a godsend. She is such a mensch, if you will, in the true sense of the word.
But did you have a particular sense in mind?
Well, no, I mean just that, you know, she's a real person with a real head on her shoulders, something that one doesn't find very often anymore. And it's nice to see it. It's nice to see some people still have a functioning brain.
Well, bless her heart, she has one of the better functioning ones in the entire state of California, as far as I'm concerned.
That's what I think. That kind of leads me into one of the points I wanted to touch on with you. And that's, do you have the general feeling that the American populace is being dumbed down by the society itself?
Oh, has been. That's a generational thing. It is literally a sedentary brain drain. You know, and it's not just because I run the risk of becoming an elitist, sounding like an elitist. It's not just American Idol. I am a useless sack on college football Saturdays, and obviously because I'm talking about college football expansion in flipping June, it affects my daily life. But I can get outside that box. There's a lot of America that for some reason or another can't or isn't in, or among other things. I think there has been a deliberate and successful attempt to make sure that people become disinterested in their government, and it's a function of the lack of an ongoing civic dialogue anymore.
Right. I mean, we used to have things called civics when I went to school, and social studies. You know, we learn what the executive branch is and who it is. Learn that there's a legislator.
And we watch little videos of I'm Only a Bill on Capitol Hill.
Correct. But, and this is the thing. Bob, I'm not that much older than you are. I'm no spring chicken, but I'm not quite a century yet. And yet I remember when I was a kid, when I started going to school, they were offering Latin in many high schools.
Yeah, this is a rant that I go off on fairly frequently, too. Yeah.
Nowadays, I hate to say it, most Americans who have gone through the American school system do not know their own language at all.
Oh, no, and I was talking to somebody in D.C. about that. I've got a new strategy. And the next time that someone tells me that they want to have English be the official language, I'm just going to look at him and say, cool, what's a gerund? And if they tell me it's a little forest creature that gets in their gardens,
uh-huh,
or that it's what their granny turned into and that's why she's in the nursing home, I'm going to tell them that they've no business wanting English to be the official anything until they have a working comprehension of it.
Exactly. And, I mean, people who say stuff like that don't seem to be aware of the fact that English became the commonly spoken language. It's not our official language, by the way, which nobody seems to understand when I point that out to them. English is not the official language. It is the one that we use. But there is no official language.
Well, no, and the people who want it to be the official language, you know, like idiots in Arizona. You know, it's never. You know, the first, the first. If you want an official language of Arizona, it should probably be either Hopi or Navajo.
Correct.
Then the second language should be Spanish because it's been spoken there. The second longest time by the greatest amount of people. And then English can work in at a distant third.
Correct.
You know, that's like having a minority, in North Dakota who speak, Quechua. And them wanting it to be the official language of North Dakota. Well, you know, frankly, there's not enough people who speak it.
Right.
Even if they declare that it's the coin of the realm, it doesn't matter. And you know what? It's just all that language BS is nothing but bigotry. It's not even thinly veiled bigotry. It just is bigotry. If you go over to Crooks and Liars, and by the way, I got to meet and chat a little bit with John Amato not name dropping here, but I'm name dropping a little bit from Crooks and Liars, and told him how much we appreciate their good work. And I had several wonderful conversations with Dave Nywert, who does all the elimination work, eliminationist work over there. But if you go there and scroll down a bit, you'll find a post of a video. The title is Arizona's Immigration Battle Becomes a Major Nexus for White Supremacists and the Mainstream. And Dave Nywert posted this. And my God, wait a minute. This will make you crazy. It's 6 minutes long, but just check out a little bit of this, Cossack. You will scream. The lead into the video says June 5th, 2010, an assortment of racists and political opportunists held a rally in Phoenix, Arizona to support SB 1070 and counteract the effects of the boycott. And there are some gems in here.
An Anglo-Protestant poor culture society member, the greatest society on the face of the earth. So any illegal alien can be a violent felon or a terrorist. And no one can know, no one can distinguish the most dangerous illegal aliens from the illegal aliens who are, well, just plain old criminals.
Anderson Cooper of CNN.
Get rid of him!
Be arrested for a traitor.
And there's all kinds of white supremacists and skinheads, because of course they're part and parcel of this movement, including White Boy Society. They're a white nationalist biker club that's in favor of SB 1070. I mean, there's a quote in here if you go further in, that you know they're deadly dangerous, Cossack, but they're also stupidly funny. There's a woman in this video who says that there is a a radical Islamic Mexican Catholic movement taking over our nation and getting rid and killing American citizens.
Huh?
Yes, a radical Islamic Mexican Catholic movement. You know, that is almost as funny as the night that Michael Savage declared that the accordion came to Mexico because of Nazism.
You mean they didn't have accordions before, huh?
Not according to... No.
He's not right in the head. I mean, that's just the simple explanation for it. He's not right in the head. But, I mean, you know, the thing is, it's... this ties the two things together about stupidity and Arizona. My dad, as I said before, spoke and wrote literally the best English grammatically speaking, of any person I have ever met.
Well, my God, consider Vladimir Nabokov.
He's a friend of my dad's, by the way.
Yeah, why am I not surprised? Joseph Conrad learned English like a four-year-old, and went on to write The Heart of Darkness. Now, say what you will about that era's style of writing, but Jiminy, you start at 30 years old and set out to learn, Arabic, and go write the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. I'm sorry, that would be Farsi, wouldn't it?
Right.
They're lunatics.
Here's another point that gets to me is our side, the left side of the spectrum, the progressive side, the liberal side, whatever the hell you want to call it. We keep on having concentric circles of firing squads. And instead of shooting out, we're all shooting in. We can't seem, it's like the whole thing about identity politics. To be quite honest with you, I have no use for that. I have one criteria alone, and that is human politics. It doesn't matter whether you're black or you're a female or you're...
Yeah, because, see, those are all constructs. I mean, the female versus male isn't... Well, it kind of is because there's varying degrees of gender we now know. The only thing that really distinguishes us from the rest of the planet is the fact that we're human and they're not.
Correct.
And there is, you know, there are a million different ways that various and sundry groups and individuals and sects and so forth have worked tirelessly to make sure that we don't see the obvious. There's humans and not humans. And that probably is an entirely bigoted human-centric view on my part, but I'm still not quite there yet.
Well, I mean, as far as we're concerned, you know, we are humans. We're kind of, you know, like it or not, we're stuck with it. You know, we are human, sort of.
Yeah, play the hand you were dealt.
Correct. But you know, so being human-centric is accepted. Everybody else is. But the thing is, you know, we keep on having these idiotic internecine fights. Like, for example, the idiots in this administration backed up Blanche Lincoln because supposedly she is more electable in the general than Halter is. And crowing about it, telling all of us, the progressives, the ones that have really worked to improve the party, we're basically having them thumb their noses at us and keeping us fighting amongst ourselves. And that's crazy.
And I just got a headline in from our buddy Clayton. White House officials meet with labor to make amends for disparaging toilet comments. What did Sandra say about amateur hour? You know, there's just words you don't use. And, you know, that's maybe one of them. From the Washington Post, in a private meeting currently underway with labor leaders, top White House officials are working hard to smooth over tensions in the wake of an anonymous administration official's claim that unions had flushed $10 million down the toilet in Arkansas. Well, you know, if anybody should be mad, I mean, labor's got a right to be mad over the fact that the White House, you know, just deliberately went, ding, you know, Three Stooges style and stuck a finger in their eye. But then again, how long before some right-wing website puts up a post that says, Obama administration refers to Arkansas as toilet? Because they're already having a fit over the fact that Barack Obama said he's talking to experts to tell him whose ass to kick. Senator Jim Crazier and a sprayed roach Inhofe said, right now, I think the president made a mistake in the words that he used in an interview yesterday. I think he lost a lot of credibility there when he used words that were not very presidential. And, of course, CNBC's Becky Quick promptly said that Obama was wrong because there were kids sitting around and watching this. Really? Were they sitting around and watching when Dick Cheney told Pat Leahy to go F himself? Were they watching then, Becky Quick, you know?
People are idiots. Well, the thing is, it's not a question of who's asked to kick. There are plenty of those. The problem is that
he's not
Obama,
kicking any of them. He's only talking about kicking them.
Correct. That and the fact that if he had any cojones at all, he would have elbowed BP out of the way 6 weeks ago and said, excuse me, you screwed up enough. We'll take over now and turn it over to people who know what they're doing and are willing, if necessary.
And we'll send you the bill.
Yeah,
here's your part of the job, BP. You get to pay the bill.
Exactly.
And, you just got it. And by the way, Cossack, you just got a little fan mail in from Jim. He said his comments are always appreciated and enjoyed. May he live long and prosper. Cossack, I do have to roll, though, because we've got them all lit up. I, you know, see, this is what happens when I leave for a couple of days. All right, you take care, man.
Backlog.
All right, see you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from North Florida, that's the Cossack. You know, I'm really, really disturbed by this business in Arkansas and the fact that someone's acting like labor didn't have a right to go after someone who was clearly anti-labor. Can we? No. Democrat, Republican, no. Screw that. Because Blanche Lincoln is about as much a Democrat as I am a Whig. And if the unions are going to get mad, I'll tell you, well, they've got a right to be mad at the Obama administration. But they need to get mad that there weren't another $2 or $3 or $4 million ponied up to finish the job on Blanche Lincoln. Now, they may have ultimately done the job if she loses to Boozman, John Boozman. Okay, there's the John Boozman signature. Whenever that Repiglican gets elected in November, every time I say John Boozman, I have to go, everybody loves the stork. But you know what? Maybe labor has finally come around to because weren't there a hell of a lot of labor millions of dollars involved in getting Barack Obama elected? And what has it gotten, labor? Here's a hint. Not a damn thing. Granted, labor would be fighting for its very life if Grumpy McCain and Godzilla from Wasilla had gotten elected. But when in the last generation has labor not been fighting for its very life? Never mind the last generation. When, since the inception of the idea of working people standing together for their own best interest, when in that entire history have they not been fighting for their life? I know for a fact they were fighting for their lives on Blair Mountain. I know for a fact they were fighting for their lives in Flint, Michigan. I know for a fact they were fighting for their lives in the Haymarket in Chicago. How do I know they were fighting for their lives? Because, by God, they lost them. They lost them. Jesus. How hard is this to figure out? And look, I'll go ahead and say it. You know where every last bit of this labor screwed up theme is coming from out of the White House. Let's just get this out of the way. That is not Barack Obama. That is not Obama speak. That is Rom speak. And yeah, I'll go ahead and say it if nobody else will. If a big rock fell out of the sky and landed on Rahm Emanuel, I would nominate the rock for a damn medal. He is toxic. He is poison. He is everything that no Democrat should ever aspire to be. Because he's no Democrat. He's no liberal. He's no progressive. He doesn't give a good old-fashioned goddamn about anybody who works for a living in this country. He's a corporatist. He's just a corporatist. Okie dokie? Yeah, I thought so. It's about 6 minutes before the hour, and we've got to take a little break because, well, I'm getting a little scratchy. And plus, in addition to that, we also have, it's Thursday, you know, even though I'm having trouble remembering that. My weeks are so screwed up after these trips. But it's Thursday, and that means I get a treat. That means that I get, yes, and you get, and we get Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls, and we will get to them all. Because after all, this is conversation radio, right? Right. This is America's listener-supported, may I emphasize the words, listener-supported liberal voice. Bills to pay. Really, not kidding. Still crawling out of the hole we created in May. But this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. Thursday, June 10th, 2010.
It's almost like being a little kid and afraid of the boogeyman in the closet, but this boogeyman's real. Just globs of death out there.
Even more of the Gulf mired in BP oil, while clean energy legislation is still mired in the Senate. The fossil fuel industry claims more lives. Plus, if you spill it, he will come.
I know there must be a question as to why I'm here. I'd like to assure everyone in the room that it's not because I heard a voice in a cornfield.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It was hard for me to fathom how we could engineer nuclear power and put a man on the moon, but somehow not muster the technology to clean up an oil disaster of our own making.
It's hard for me to fathom, Kevin Costner, how you couldn't muster the knowledge that nuclear is pronounced nuclear. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by Velvet Revolution's new campaign, ProtectOurElections.org. Fighting for real election reform in Congress once and for all. Please join the fight against corporate influence, voter suppression, and unverifiable privatized voting systems.
Sign the petition to demand election reform from Congress now at protectourelections.org. That's protectourelections.org. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's day 52 of the Gulf oil disaster. It's going to be a long, hot summer. What do you have for us today?
Well, the fossil fuel industry claims two more lives. Two men were killed Wednesday in Texas in yet another natural gas pipeline explosion. This is the second fatal blast in Texas in 48 hours. This time it was in the panhandle near the Oklahoma border. The first was on Monday near Dallas, Texas. That killed one. In both cases, excavation crews verified the location of natural gas pipelines before digging, but they accidentally ruptured them anyway.
Add to that, of course, the 11 killed out there in the Gulf. The 29 killed in Massey's mine disaster a couple of months ago. Two killed in a mine disaster in Kentucky. I don't know how many, 60 or something, killed out there in Russia in mine disasters. The fossil fuel deaths continue.
Senator Al Franken of Minnesota addressed that same issue this week in a hearing on oil company liability.
Yeah, echoing one of our favorite refrains.
I've never seen a solar panel or a wind turbine kill 11 people. I've never seen a 50-day ethanol spill. And I think that we have to rethink our entire energy portfolio and how and what we're doing to drive the demand for oil. And I think that this is a wake-up call.
Yeah. Do you think? Glad to hear Franken talking about it. Still not enough Democrats using this opportunity to say we need clean energy legislation now.
And in fact, some Democrats are actively working against it. In Tuesday's Super Tuesday primary election in 12 states, Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas reportedly won the Democratic Party nomination, which isn't necessarily good news for President Obama's agenda to move that clean energy and climate legislation that's mired in the Senate. Lincoln is a conservative Democrat from a farm state, and she's withheld her support unless major concessions and goodies are thrown to the agriculture industry. Obama's got to have her support to beat an assumed filibuster to pass it, especially now that the bill's co-sponsor, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, has come out against his own bill, saying at first that it doesn't have enough offshore drilling.
Brother.
Graham's new stance is an about-face from just a month ago.
This guy is schizophrenic. Is he for his bill or is he against it? He's schizophrenic.
It's really hard to figure out what he's doing.
I don't even think he knows what he's doing.
And not that anyone in the Senate will listen, but a new poll shows that a growing majority of Americans support clean energy legislation. The BP oil disaster continues. Heavy oil has now reached Alabama's inland waterway, leading officials to close the main water access route to the Gulf. Animal rescue centers in Louisiana report that they are receiving more than five times as many oiled birds as they received in the entire previous 6 weeks combined. Now it looks like both BP and the federal government are focusing solely on reducing the spill and mitigating the damage until those relief wells can be finished in August. To that end, a most interesting hearing on Capitol Hill on Wednesday had actor Kevin Costner appearing before a House subcommittee to testify on his new invention, an oil and water separator. It's a centrifuge that basically vacuums up and then separates out the oil, leaving the water 99% clean. Costner testified how his invention was initially met with apathy for over 12 years.
The list of government agencies, oil companies, and foreign companies we contacted reads like a who's who of those who needed it, those who should have been looking for it, and probably more to the point, those who should have been developing it themselves.
And it looks like the invention works. BP has 32 of the machines on order.
Took them long enough.
And BP executives are still disputing the existence of undersea plumes of oil, even though the government has confirmed them. Perhaps they should talk to Al Walker, a wildlife rescue worker who dove 60 feet into the Gulf.
Something I've never seen in diving in my whole life out here. These big snot balls. No, I never saw it in my life, ever.
Maybe BP and Mr. Suttles should go jump in the Gulf themselves. Read about that and see our exclusive video inside the BP boardroom as executives react to the spill. Okay, it's not exclusive. We lied, but so did BP. And this video is very, very funny. Check it out at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
5.5 minutes after the hour as we move into hour 3 of the program this evening. and going back to the phones in just a matter of a bare couple of minutes. But wanted to remind you of something or give you a little heads up real quick. Have I mentioned that I have a horrible, horrible, horrible crush on Ashley Judd? Because I do. I went to the National Press Club yesterday to watch her remarks on mountaintop removal and was simply, well, I just have a terrible, terrible weak spot for smart women. That's why I married the lovely Agnes, in addition to her being all beautiful and stuff. But going there with me was Dave Nywert from Crooks and Liars, and he is a great guy. Let me just say now that the new book that he and John Amato authored together, Dave was kind enough to provide me with a review copy, much of which, or portions of much of which, I have read in the last few days in off moments because I was so engaged by both the subject matter and the scholarship that went into it. If you want a textbook, on right-wing viciousness, right-wing hatred, and right-wing lunacy, then Over the Cliff, How the Election of Barack Obama Drove the Right Wing Insane, is required reading on your bookshelf. No doubt about it. But anyway, Dave took some video of Ashley's remarks on mountaintop removal. I'm sorry, Ms. Judd, Ashley, like we're buddies. We are comrades in the struggle, but no, she wouldn't know me from Adam's house cat. But anyway, Dave took some video of Ms. Judd's remarks, and we'll have a post, probably the most prominent post that Crooks and Liars has ever had on mountaintop removal, going up at Crooks and Liars in a matter of minutes. So by all means, go over, register, comment, tell them that Bob Kincaid sent you, and that you too are engaged in the struggle to end the Appalachian apocalypse. Because you know what? The Horn family has done tons to raise awareness of the horrors taking place here, and help people to understand that you know, Appalachia is not a forgettable place, and that we are not America's little resource colony filled chock-a-block with little coal dust covered Keebler elves working to keep everybody's lights on. But anyway, let's do go back to the phones. I had a chance to find out who's on which line, which is a real treat for me, and that is why I know, as a matter of fact, that our old friend Bob from North Dakota, whom we haven't talked to in forever and ever, is on the line. Hey, Bob, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing good.
I want to take you back.
Okay.
I want to take you back a bit.
Okay. Can make sure you get closer to your phone microphone because I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. I want to take you back, Bob. I want to take you back. What your daddy told you back in the day, okay? He told you if you lie down with dogs, boy, you're gonna wake up with fleas.
And that is that's the God's honest truth.
And he never lied to you, and I know he didn't. But God damn it, Bob, I'm tired of listening. Sandra speaks the truth. I love that lady's voice. I love her. A real, truthful lady, one with heart, one with soul, one with strength,
and a fantastic, observant mind. Yes, I agree, Bob.
And you married a lovely lady, and as I did, but I am tired of listening to all the BPBS. I'm tired of listening. I'm tired of hearing it. I'm tired of seeing it. I'm tired of seeing creatures that my dear lady goes out. Brenda goes out every evening and puts corn down for the peasants so they can eat. There are blackbirds and brown birds and redbirds. little teeny, what do you call them, Tweety birds.
Yep.
Things we don't even
little
know
finches and stuff.
Are. We don't even know what they are, but they come to eat at our table. And Glenda feeds them because she loves them, and she cares about nature, and she does it from the bottom of her soul, Bob, as your father and I did. We fought for this goddamn fucking nation.
Ah, Bob, word. Yeah, okay, easy there. Because, see, and now I'm not having any trouble hearing you.
Okay, my bad.
That's okay.
We fought for this nation of people that we believed in. And we thought there was something worthy in them that they could stand for themselves, stand for something decent. I'm sorry that I.
Yeah, I understand.
I am outraged. I am so deeply outraged by what's going on. While people play games or listen to whatever TV or radio or do whatever, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of trying to tell them that there is something beyond them. There's your children, your children's children, your progeny, those things that you love so much, you cherish beyond yourself. And that's you, Bob. I cherish you. I love you. I care about you. Excuse me. I think, therefore I am. Come on. No, I think of you, and I think of dear Agnes every day. Every week, I care about this nation. You know, I live on it's not as flat as you think it is. You've never been in North Dakota. You don't know what North Dakota is. But I think about West Virginia, and I think about how this nation came to be, and it wasn't some Bible thumpers. These men didn't even have, all they had was the wherewithal to try to stand against a corporation. It wasn't King George they fought against. It was, what was that corporation back then? Can you remember? Can you remember it? Huh?
I know.
You do. And its name was?
Go on.
Okay. What corporation had all the tea in the world? Okay. What was it? East India Corporation?
British East India. Sure.
Yeah. This is like British Petroleum. Same difference. They are just that.
They're predators, Bob. They're predators.
Yeah, but we, the people, fought them. We fought them, Bob.
You might find it interesting, Bob, to note that while he is admittedly a comedian, he is a brilliant one who speaks a lot of truth. Lewis Black has announced his solution for the oil spill. The BP disaster. He said, declare war and invade BP.
It can't invade something that doesn't exist, Bob.
But see, we've got the United States Supreme Court to thank for that now, Bob, because BP is now a person.
No, it's not, Bob. Not a person. It's a thing. It's like, okay, what? Okay, back in the 50s, everybody's worried about invaders from outer space. We don't have to worry about alien by the most ugly thing on this planet. Corporatist, fascist, Republicans, Bob. They came out of the woods and, hey, Bob, I don't care how many shots you got in that shotgun. You can't take them all out. There are too damn many of them. They're just there. They hate everything. They don't care about Mother Earth. And I had to call tonight. I couldn't stop. I listened to Sandra's voice and I thought, it's time that I said my piece. And I thought, and I look out on this beautiful earth around me, this surrounding earth, just this little piece of property I have. And I look out there and I see green. I see the grass is growing. I see the trees are blossoming. I see all the leaves coming out. I see the
spring has come to North Dakota.
No, it's not spring. It's early summer. And I'm watching this beautiful earth blossom. It's blossoming. It's giving its fruit to us. Us. And we have to either embrace and enjoy and love and care about these wonderful gifts. And they aren't just that gift. Or we can poison it, as E.T. has done, as Adolf Hitler did, as the Jewish Israeli group did when they attacked people trying to other people and stop. Just stop. Please, people, stop. Just stop. Don't buy. Don't protest. Just stop giving them the wherewithal to get by with what they're doing. Come on. It's time, people. It's time to just find your wisdom. Better way, a more blessed way, if you want to say it that way. But think about it. Let us just work to do something against evil. And British Petroleum, every other drilling company on this planet, that are poking holes into Mother Earth, are giving us nothing
but grief, Bob. It's awfully good to hear from you this evening, my friend. Do take care and give our best regards to Glenda, okay?
I will do my best to do that.
And think well as you're feeding those gorgeous creatures out there. Bob, have a wonderful evening. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
An old friend of long standing. That's Bob from North Dakota. And with something, and Bob brought something up, and I'm going right back to the phones in a second. But I have to share this with you, because this is important. Reverbo said something Friday night in an email to me, and I wrote back to him, because Reverbo is, after all, the author of the blog at the Horn called A Cavalcade of Crazy. Reverbo noted that, And Bob in North Dakota just reminded me that I had to share this with you. Reverbo reminded me that Sunday was the 6th of June this past, and that the 6th of June has profound significance in American history. And he wrote and posted at the Horn an essay, an opinion piece, as it's called in the business. A Cavalcade of Crazy, D-Day and Beyond. And by the way, if you want to post to blog postings at headonradionetwork.com, you can log in via Facebook. And it's quite simple. Log in with Facebook, and you can comment to your heart's content. This piece went up at BuzzFlash on Sunday. And even though I was traveling, I monitored things to the best of my ability. And you know what? On Sunday, nowhere in the liberal blogosphere did I see a whole lot of remark, reminiscence, or remembrance of the 6th of June, 1944. But Reverbo did remember. And what he has written deserves to be read. A cavalcade of crazy, D-Day and beyond. By the way, I shared this with our good friend Joe Bagent, and he wrote back and said, "Bravo, Reverbo, Bob, you got to read this on air." So when our buddy Joe Bagent says something is good, I know it's good. I knew it was good before I sent it to him, but when it has the imprimatur of the approval of Joe Bagent, that's serious good. And I took his read this on air to heart, even though we're a few days beyond the 6th of June. Scene. Normandy, France, June 6th, 1944. D-Day. Operation Overlord begins. Allied expeditionary forces in Europe launched the largest amphibious invasion of all time against Hitler and the Nazi war machine. More than 5,000 ships and 13,000 aircraft supported the landing of 160,000 troops, establishing a foothold from which to drive the Germans back across Europe and bring an end to that horrible conflict. Over 9,000 Allied soldiers were killed or wounded during the first day of the invasion. World War II in Europe was declared over on May the 8th, 1945, only 11 months later. The writing was on the wall for the Nazis, driven out of Africa, Italy, and Russia, short on fuel, basically zero in-the-field maintenance capability, and fatally dysfunctional leadership. But what a savage 11 months they were. Let's never forget that in America and her allies, the Germans faced an unstoppable force. The U.S. Army had the most organized and, just as importantly, creative fighting divisions on the battlefield. We broke their code, eventually dominated the sea and the skies, and anything we lacked in firepower, we made up with ingenuity. We could get damaged armor up and running again in days, if not hours, and our soldiers were skilled, valiant, and refused to be beaten. It all came, of course, at a terrible price. There were 75,000 American casualties alone in the Battle of the Bulge later that year in December 1944. Remember, this was not only a world war, but the deadliest conflict in human history. The loss estimates are staggering. 60 million dead is not an exaggeration. Of that number, 40 million people, two-thirds of the total, were the result of deaths other than combat. The term D-Day has become part of our lexicon in reference to a dramatic event horizon in the lives of human beings. It's come to assume the moment when an assembly of determined, virtuous people face down a common enemy to drive out evil and recover their freedom. They bear one weapon for which there is no defense, the truth. And on the 6th of June, 1944, the truth arrived at beaches named Omaha, Juneau, and Sword, behind the steel doors of hundreds of LSTs. The ignorant misunderstand or underestimate the term at their peril. D-Day is a big day. Scene. The Gulf of Mexico, May 2010. A foreign energy company doing business off the shore of Louisiana is responsible for the largest oil-related environmental disaster in U.S. history. One of British Petroleum's transocean rigs exploded and caught fire and released a torrent of dark poison on April the 20th that still has not been contained and created an ecological and social catastrophe some have equated with dropping a nuclear bomb on our country. Is it possible to connect these two scenes? Here at A Cavalcade of Crazy, I have been considering that possibility. A rather large and disturbing picture unfolded, one which has been unfolding for quite a while now, as the oil slick spreads across the water as if from an open vein. It occurred to me on this 66th anniversary of D-Day that too many of those patriots who fill graves over Omaha Beach, in Arlington, and in soldiers' graves everywhere, have been unwitting pawns in a giant con game. Because what has transpired is that these brave men and women, whether enlisted troops or luckless draftees, have been used to keep us safe, to be oppressed by forces on our own side. It's not just bombs and rockets that are killing us, but the relentless and unrestrained quest for resources and profit. The establishment will sacrifice us in a heartbeat for that cause, and the crusade is always presented and justified with that tried and true PR spin designed for the lowest form of life. Support the troops. We're making the world safe for democracy. We're fighting for freedom. Anybody against freedom around here? The larger question, however, lingers. Did old Private Ryan and all the rest give their lives so that we could ultimately be destroyed by dollars? In light of the history of the last century and into this one, it's not difficult to imagine this scam. Money, or at least its merciless pursuit, clearly occupies the dominant position in the mass destruction arsenal. Endless strife and grief usually follow in its wake. Let's not forget the Cold War didn't exactly stay cold. The Korean War took 37,000 American lives and Vietnam claimed 58,000. The global war on terror is currently at 5,000 U.S. soldiers and climbing. Those figures only represent our combat deaths. Add in the innocent civilian casualties from all parts of the fighting and you're up in the millions again quickly. And what has been the legacy? You know, I don't think we were any closer to wearing fur hats and speaking Russian than we were to wearing atomic pants and speaking Martian. The result of all the institutionalized bloodshed is that we are safe and free to be soaked, worked, and jobbed, drenched in corporate sludge like those pelicans gasping for life in the Gulf. Exactly what values are we protecting so these marauding corporatists can loot our treasury, bribe officials, devastate animals, birds, and fish, ruin our land and water, and wreck the livelihoods of thousands of people who depend on their country being kept safe and clean? Every time I look at pictures of those poor birds, I am quite ready to dip those responsible up to the top of their oily heads in their own slime. And that includes the thieves in business, politics, and on Wall Street who encourage too many of my brain-dead neighbors to keep believing that if we don't continue mining coal and pumping oil, all their big-screen TVs will go out. Or they'll go broke watching them. Which are not only lies, but insults. Excuse me for laughing in your face at the idea that television is important. I'm not including The Simpsons, Bertie and Jeeves, or Trailer Park Boys in that comment. Those are art forms, not mindless drivel. At any rate, my usual concerns for eloquence may be undermined by emotion and anger in this piece. But for the record, let me state that World War II was an undeniable call to action against murder and madness on a colossal scale committed by fanatics obsessed with avarice and power. Motives not unlike those demonstrated by the reckless corporate behavior we suffer from today, and I am proud my country stepped up and joined the fight. That same opposition to injustice needs to be vigilant today. Whether unfortunately or by design, in our efforts to rid the world of the tyranny of all the foreign isms that threaten our freedom, we failed to protect ourselves from perhaps the most basic and insidious. Fascism. Or as Mussolini suggested it be more properly referred, corporatism. Hell, not only did we not finish the job, it's thriving right here. We should never forget that men like Don Blankenship and Tony Hayward represent simply different players in the same treacherous framework. The old symbols and uniforms may be buried under the rubble of World War II, but this enemy is alive and well. Who can't feel sympathy for the last D-Day vets if they look around at the damaging influence caused by the stranglehold of financial and corporate interests on our own country and think, we didn't fight for this. America and our freedom is most definitely worth defending. Industrial predators like British Petroleum, Massey Energy, and their cronies in government who take care of them are not. General Smedley Butler had plenty to say on this subject. Put war as a racket on your summer reading list. These corporations, not to mention our legislators, were originally supposed to exist at our convenience, not the other way around. My D-Day imagery is in response to mercenaries and profiteers whose only purpose is apparently to make a dirty buck off my resources and not care one whit about the consequences. It's as if we've been invaded by a race of economic monsters. Perhaps mobsters is a better word, domestic shades of John Perkins' hitmen. With the right connections in finance and government, they are allowed to rampage over our land with little regard for our fellow citizens or the environment. Last I checked, the people of the United States, as described very clearly in the Constitution, make no obligations to priests, generals, corporations, senators, or kings. We call the shots. You conduct business for our benefit first, yours second. That concept seems to have sailed right off the tracks. There's a common color and substance shared by weasels like Blankenship and Hayward, who is really getting kind of sick of this and just wants his life back, you know. Black grease. Only last month, 29 human beings died in a hole at the Big Branch mine, and now we have this atrocity in the Gulf to endure. Both totally unnecessary and totally predictable. The first so-called oil crisis was back in 1973. Safe, affordable power from the sun, wind, and waves has been available for, 4 billion years or so. And Nikola Tesla was working on an actual universal wireless energy grid for the entire planet over 100 years ago. But there is nothing the energy complex won't do in order to keep our wallets glued to their insatiable meters. With this remembrance of D-Day, I honor the soldiers who fought and died on those beaches. I'm also moved to think that under the guise of fighting for freedom, we enable our own abuse and survive to be mowed down more by banks than bullets. D-Day and beyond. By the Horns critic at large, Reverbo. It's worth reading again. Like I said, if you wish to comment, you can log in with Facebook to do so. It's easy. And that sort of dovetails with the poem that Jim and I were talking about a few minutes ago. This won't take long at all. I am going back to the phones. Yevgeny Alexandrovich Yevtushenko, The Torments of Conscience, for Dmitri Shostakovich. We live. Dying is not our business. Shame is another lost episode. But like an unseen Madonna, conscience is standing at every crossroad. And her children and her grandchildren, the torments of conscience, strange torments, with vagrant's crutch and bag are wandering a world which is everywhere dishonest. From one gate once more to the next gate, once again from doorstep to doorstep, chanting like old Russian beggars, they travel with God for their heart's help. Surely it was they who always haunted the serfs, tapping with one finger secretly on their windows, and who pounded with their fists in the palaces of the tsars. Surely they hurried off dead Pushkin on a sledge in the snow from a black sky. It was they who drove Dostoevsky to prison. It was they who whispered to Tolstoy, "Fly!" The executioners understood it thus. He who torments himself is a troublemaker. Torments of conscience, this is dangerous. Conscience itself must be liquidated. But like the clanging of an alarm bell rattling their houses at nighttime, torments of conscience, terrible, frightened the executioners with their crimes. For even the guardians of injustice who abandoned all honor long ago may no longer know the meaning of conscience, but the torments of conscience they do know. And if in this wide world where no one is guiltless, someone has heard within himself the cry, "What have I done?" Then something can be done with this world. I do not believe in the prophets construing the coming of the second or the thousandth Rome. I believe in the words, "What are you doing?" In "What are we doing?" bitterly spoken. And on the slippery edge of lost faith, I am kissing your dark hands, for you alone are my last faith. Torments of conscience, fierce torments. And that's why my emails, when you receive an email from me, have as my signature line, "A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all." That's what this is all about. Silencing the stillest, smallest voice on the entire planet. The one that has no podium, no bully pulpit, only the attention of moments fleetingly caught in which we ask that question, "What are we doing?" And we ask those questions in Appalachia, and we ask those questions with our brothers and sisters on the Gulf Coast. And the answer comes back, sick and terrifying. Because the answer comes back, that while we may not know what we are doing, we are damned well doing it knowingly. Because there is a standard out there that is used in the law, and it is used in the definition of both crimes and torts. For there are some crimes and some civil offenses that are so obvious that any person with a functioning mind, and this is the important phrase, knew or should have known that their conduct was horrible and awful, reprehensible, dangerous, deadly, toxic, poisonous, murderous. Pick one. And so I am grateful for those of us, and I include the Horn family, who not only listen to, but actively listen for that still small voice. Because that still small voice is the only hope we have. That still small voice is the one that makes you want to scream when you see the photographs coming out of the Gulf. That still small voice is what makes you want to rise up in righteous anger when you hear Tony Hayward say, "I want my life back." That still small voice is what lets you know that you are still alive on this planet and that you are something far more than most of the corporations and companies and limited liability partnerships and the government itself think you are, to wit, a consumer of things. Not a liver, not a breather, not a lover, not an ingester of the human experience itself, but a consumer. And so when you walk out of that well-lighted room, you reach and you turn off the damn switch. Because you know what that electricity cost. Not just in dollars, but in human blood. And you think twice before you choose which gas station you will pull into. Because they're all evil bastards. But at the very least, we can not give money to the current crop of evil bastards who may very well be changing the very ability of we and our progeny to live in any sense of the defined word upon this planet. Indeed. Indeed. 17 minutes before the hour, and we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I wanted to say something about Ashley Judd.
Yes, please.
I was very fortunate last night to find that it was on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
You could play it back, and it wasn't live. And I thought she was just magnificent.
Wasn't she?
Oh, man. And the thing is that there was at least three things that really stood out to me that she said was about how much bigger all that damage was than what we're getting in the Gulf.
I've tried to point that out so many times.
And then another was about the...
But she was very sensitive about it, Juanita. She said not to compare suffering.
No. No.
But she said what has been going on for 50 days in the Gulf of Mexico has been going on for 50 years in Appalachia.
Right. And she, you know, just so much of her heart was in it, too, you know, and... I really recommend, I mean, it's like over an hour, and you can definitely watch it. You can go online and go to C-SPAN and just look for it. It's called Mountaintop Removal is what they've got it listed under.
And again, our buddy Dave Nywert will have a post of it up at Crooks and Liars shortly as well.
They got the whole thing?
No, Dave didn't get the whole thing, but he got significant chunks.
And another thing was about the agreements to the, that they, conned them out of, you know, years ago, out of the mental right.
Yeah, the broad form deed.
Under them.
Right, the broad form deed is what that's called.
Yeah. And, actually dupe the people, you know, and, then it was upheld by different courts and all like that. And then another thing was that letter from her, I think it was from her grandmother to somebody else about their coming across our land. And this was like in 78?
Yes.
They were, you know, hoping they wouldn't. And said, why do we have this strip mining, you know? But I thought she was magnificent. She's one of my favorite actresses, and I just really love her now, you know. And I don't blame you for having a crush on her.
Even Agnes said she doesn't blame me.
Well, that settles it. But and another thing I wanted to say was your broadcasts were wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, you know what? I almost did it during the interview with Cenk. I said, you know, I wanted to say, because I didn't know if he'd do it, but I wanted him to turn to the camera and say, "Hi, Juanita," because I know you're a big Young Turks fan.
I'm telling you, when you said he was on there, I was, oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. And, you know, he spoke about Blankenship quite a bit on his show. He's savvy too. And that him and Rachel Maddow. And Rachel Maddow, she broadcast from you know, Louisiana. She went out and she actually got nauseated and sick. She said it kind of like having a flu from the oil that she smelled.
Yeah, that stuff's not good for you. We need Rachel, and some overtures have been made. Rachel needs to come visit here in Appalachia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's another thing that Ashley was talking about. She would love for the president to ride over. You know. And how many mountains is it? 500? 5,000?
500. And well, more
yeah.
than 500 now.
Wow.
And 2,000 miles of streams.
But she had it down, you know. She really, she just made it so plain and everything, you know. And she's got some backing, you know, with her. But, you know, she's different. I don't know if she's a liberal or not, but she's almost got
She me. Is.
I mean, she's different from her mama, you know. Her mama's real right-wing.
But, you know, how many times have we noted that that's the story of America anymore? Broken,
yeah.
You know, families split asunder, done directly by the right-wing to American families, the crowd that says that they're, for, you know, family values.
Well, you know, I think her mama, you know, means well, you know, that I don't think she's, I'm sure she hasn't rejected her daughter for that. I saw her at one of the things in Washington 2 or 3 years ago where they were protesting, about the right to choose, woman's right to choose.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, then another thing is I want to report to you about Burns and McCollum.
Okay.
Burns is 15 points ahead of McCollum.
Well, that...
A choice between the devil and the devil.
The devil and the deep blue sea.
Well, the deep blue sea has a chance.
Well, the deep... Yeah, but that's the thing. The deep blue sea ain't even the deep blue sea. It's the dark and the oily sea.
I know, and we got some congressman from down here said, Bush, Obama, he's a Republican. Obama needs to be down there more. He needs to get down there more. And woman interviewing him was on MSNBC, and she said, well, what about you? He said, can't you go down there? Oh, well, I'm down there every chance I get, you know, when I'm not up. Yeah, he's supposed to go down there and not do anything else. I don't know. He can't win. We know that. And I'm agreeing with you about Ron Emanuel. Is that his name?
Rahm, R-A-H-M, yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I was a who's the guy that ran for president? I can't think of his name now.
Who, McCain?
No, Democrat and...
No, Howard Dean?
Howard Dean. I caught you a Deaniac. Anyway, he was saying how Howard Dean, you know, was ruining everything, you know, and I think that's why they got in behind somebody else, you know, because they didn't want his kind up there. I mean, he just really just berated him. And then when Dean became head of the Democratic Party, you know, he's the one that they should be, him with a 50-state strategy. See, they're trying to go back to that other way. But Howard Dean, he's the one that...
Right. Rahm Emanuel has no interest in a 50-state strategy.
No, not at all. He really put Dean down about that. And to me, Dean is basically responsible for us having a majority.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm going to, I know you're about out of time, and I'm going to let you go. I didn't get to listen to all your program. I had to leave. Jim was talking, and I'm definitely going to listen to that about the Russians and all. And when I came back in, you and Sandy were about through, so I had to listen. But can't miss them. But anyway, that's basically what I wanted to talk about. I highly recommend watching her where you were saying, but to watch her in toto, Ashley Judd, because she was just really magnificent. And I loved how she reminded me of you being proud of being a hillbilly. Proud to call herself a hillbilly. It reminded me of you. And I kept thinking...
Well, that'll be about the only thing on planet Earth that would remind anybody, that Ashley Judd would remind anybody of me.
Yeah, well, that's the compliment.
Oh, I know, but I mean, that is the onlyest thing.
No, you both have some of the same insights and knowledge, and you're both gutsy. You both stand up for what is right. You both got a lot of courage, so I think you've got a lot in common.
Well, that's the beauty of this struggle that I'm a part of, and a very small part of, is the incredible passion and heart and intelligence that people bring to it. Juanita, it is good to hear from you this evening. I'm going to try to get one more call before we round out the night.
Okay, you too, and thank you for everything, and night-night.
Take care, Juanita. Bye now.
Bye.
And we move to Haven. Hey, Haven. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, thanks a lot. The British have struck again, apparently. And I just wonder, what are these Republicans running around doing? You would think this, you know, this would be right up their alley. Foreigners who have...
Because these are white foreigners who speak English better than we do.
Better than we do. Yeah. This is the guy Doug Adams from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
It's too bad he's gone, because this would, he would be so, I mean, this would just knock him over. If he weren't already gone, this would just be.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the thing. There's a lot of people out there that think that, that what's going on in the Gulf is a so long and thanks for all the fish moment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yep, definitely.
And I would like for them to be wrong, but there's more and more evidence to suggest that they may be right.
Hmm.
I mean, you can't lose that much ocean and that much breeding ground and living ground for a significant portion of the life on Earth. You can't lose it. Just like, you know, you can't lose 500 mountains and 2,000 miles of streams without the Earth telling on you.
Right, right, right. And it may come back, but not for several hundred years. You know, the Earth can bounce.
No, I think anything we're doing, we're measuring in thousands of years at least. And that's the scary part.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I've got to keep drawing parallels between what's going on in the Gulf and what's going on here, Haven. In order for the topsoil and the water table and everything to build up the way it needs to be, for the mountains that Massey Energy and the other coal companies have destroyed to come back, we are talking about time that is darn near measured in geologic epochs. I mean, no less than 100,000 years. And it is they're toxic waste zones until then.
Yeah, I remember what you were talking about when on your trip to Utah, I think it was.
Yeah, it was like looking back a few hundred million years, and realizing that's how long it'll take, and it's scary business, and we don't know yet, Haven. That's the thing. We don't know yet what will happen to the rest of the world's oceans when this thing gets into the loop current, and it will, if it hasn't already. And the other thing we don't know is what will happen when this oil disaster gets into our drinking water supplies, and it will. You know, warm water rises from the Gulf, and storms pick it up and deposit it on the North American continent, and in Central America, and South America to an extent.
And, you know, as far as President Obama's response, the only thing I wonder is this. I mean, fine, he's gotten angry. He's kind of tried to swing to the other end of the spectrum as far as what, you know, managing his how he looks to the public. You know, and I'm sure it bothers him, and I understand that, but... You know, you remember the Terry Schiavo case and how the Republicans and Bush just basically grabbed government by the throat and did what they wanted to do and did it all in, I think, all in a weekend. They came back, they passed something or other. I'm not sure if it was an actual law or a resolution or what, but they...
Yeah, they got it done in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know... It was wrong, but that's a precedent that I don't.
But that's how they operate. They operate outside the rules of the House, the rules of the Senate, and the one thing you have to say for the Democrats is that they try to actually follow the rules. And when they do that, it means that they can't run roughshod over the other side. I do get that much of it, Haven. I hate to cut the conversation short, but dadgummit, I've run out of time. We will continue it on another evening, I hope.
Yo, definitely.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
And so it is that the program comes to an end. Thanks to everybody for everything. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep the horn going. We wouldn't be here without you. It's that simple. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to... John Fox, thanks to Peter Godbold, Special thanks to John for filling in for me those last three nights. I really appreciate it, and he did a magnificent job. And thanks to Ben Birch for all he has done with WhiteRoseSociety.org, which makes all of this possible. We could not do this without Ben. Thanks to Matt Osborne at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, and my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The struggle that they have been leading for so long. Well, we begin to see the validity, the vitality, and the necessity of it. Don't we? And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
And ain't it good to be back home again? Okay, that's the end of singing for tonight. You can come out from under the table. That wasn't going to last long anyway. Oh, my God, it's good to be back in the home studio. I certainly did enjoy being in Washington, D.C. I always do. I love getting out and sort of pushing the limits of work. And that we did, Rick Smith and Jake and I. And bless his heart, you know what? The Legion of Valor medal certainly goes to Rick Smith for his efforts in D.C. He wasn't kidding, nor was I. That was one sick puppy. Burning up with fever, guts were a wreck. But you know what? He climbed in behind the microphone like a trooper and didn't let... He's a rock! I mean, he... Gee whiz! I mean, he's like Aeneas carrying his wizened old daddy out of the flaming ruins of Troy to go found Rome on the Seven Hills or some such, whatever it was that Virgil said. And I don't mean Virgil down to the gas station. I mean Virgil who wrote the Aeneid. He did amazing work. And like I said, it's always good and enjoyable to go to those events, and you meet a lot of wonderful people. And there's a lot of great conversations that go on behind the scenes, and then there's great conversations that go on behind the microphones. But it's good to get home. It is good to get home. And first and foremostly, let me extend my sincere and enduring thanks to John Fox for stepping up and taking one for the team and doing 3 hours a night for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to keep the regular schedule of the Horn cooking along. He did amazing work in his own right, and I am very much grateful for it. But something happens whenever I'm gone, because to tell you the truth, if there was any knock on the otherwise beautiful old Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., which is truly a grand dame hotel of the area, it doesn't look like much from the outside. It's kind of yellow brick and old. But, man, you get inside, the entire staff is pure professional. It's a union shop, by the way. That's what makes them so good. They're exquisite and purely professional in all that they do everything in their power to help you. But no matter how hard they try, sometimes things do go sideways. And if you've emailed me in the last 2 or 3 days and I didn't respond, it has everything in the world to do with the fact that my connectivity in my room there was for diddly. It was not at all a good connection. So my apologies for being less than my usual responsive self on email, but it just wasn't possible. And it really, you can respond with your cell phone, but it's not much good. It's not much good until, for extended talky-talky kind of thing. No, not much good at all. So my apologies, but I'm home and I'm back where I'm supposed to be, and happy about it. Great conversations while we were there. I was thrilled to death to meet a new ally in the fight against mountaintop removal in the form, in the person of the brilliant John Gensler, working with OperationFree.net. OperationFree.net, the veterans organization that is working to get America to realize that a clean energy future, a green energy future, is not only something smart, it is also something that is absolutely vital to our national security interests, which, this is sort of brought to mind by the latest round of saber-rattling with Iran. Oh, Bob, please don't start the program with Iran. Please don't start the program with Iran. I'm not going to start the program with Iran. I'm not going to start the program with Israel either, but it may be hard not to get into it somewhere later in the program. Because they kind of got busted, Israel. Yeah. Stop, Bob. You said you weren't going to start, and I'm not. No. Let's be shallow and simple and utterly, fluff. Let's do some fluff. You okay with some fluff? Yeah. What do I mean by fluff? I mean this. That Carly Fiorina... What? Carly from Purina? No. Carly Fiorina, the woman who nearly destroyed Hewlett-Packard, who proudly announced, by the way, that if she had it all to do over again, the question was put to Carly Fiorina. Well, let me ask you this. If you were still the CEO at Hewlett-Packard and the figures said you had to cut 10,000 jobs today, would you do it as a responsible CEO? Her answer, of course. By the way, having managed HP through the worst technology recession in 25 years, didn't she get fired? Didn't she get fired as CEO because of the terrible job she did? But no, she managed it. Yeah, she managed HP through one of the worst technology recessions in 25 years.